Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Inside the Ropes podcast here in the main feed. I know what you're thinking, it's a Tuesday night. You guys usually come to me on a Friday or a Saturday. Well, that's because Finn Martin decided to take a holiday. I know what you're thinking. Finn Martin only works 10 hours a week. What does he need a holiday from? Well, he used to work 100 hours a week at Power Slam, so he does what the fuck he wants now. And that means Sandra and I are here early, which meant that she had to watch a lot of wrestling. Hi Sandra, how are you?
I mean, I'm pretty tired because I was up until about 8 in the morning watching wrestling. And yeah, so I don't have any concept of human hours at all, because if I have to watch SmackDown and Raw on a Monday night and also try and do things in my actual normal human life after a full day of work, I'm just all discombobulated. But that's okay. We're switching up schedules. I don't have a schedule anyway, obviously. So why not talk SmackDown and Raw? It really felt like weird for me, because I'm realizing more and more, like, I am a very casual WWE viewer at this point, right? Like, I wouldn't consider myself a casual wrestling fan by any means, but like in terms of WWE, I am a very casual viewer. So I was watching SmackDown yesterday and I was like, when did this musical change happen? Who is, oh, this person exists. Interesting. Why does Mojo Rawley have a belt? All of these questions that I have not been keeping up. So it was kind of, I was like, oh, Sami Zayn has a faction of dudes now. That's new.
Well, isn't it funny that, like,
I don't know, it's
the idea, the idea that, like, you know, I mean, because you, even though you're like more casual, and I mean, a lot of that is because, like, A, you work, B, there's 500 hours of wrestling a week to watch. So, like, you know, you're going to obviously prioritize either the stuff you need to watch or the stuff that you really want to check out. But, like, I've noticed that, like, you will check out the odd thing here or there on Raw, like, fairly regularly. But, like, what's interesting is that, like, through either listening to me and Finn or word of mouth or Twitter, like, nothing really ever compels you to go to SmackDown. And even when, like, we were talking, because you were like, yeah, I just kept, like, going to do other stuff when SmackDown was on. I was like, that's kind of the story of SmackDown, which is weird, given that Fox are putting all this money to it, and it's actually getting pretty good ratings. But as a show, it's so lifeless.
I mean, there are certain things that seem fun in theory, right? Like, I kind of like the idea of Sami Zayn having a stable of dudes and being angry about stuff. Like, Sami Zayn's incredible on the outside in his, like, I'm going to be the liberator and I'm going to be awesome and I'm going to be Sami Zayn. Like, he's so dynamic and so fun and just, like, such a talent, right? Like, he's incredibly, I hate to say he's so wasted in WWE, but he's kind of wasted in WWE right now because he just feels like a dude who runs away. Like, was it Braun that he faced off with? They're all going after Braun, which is interesting considering the history of Sami Zayn and Braun Strowman. And like, when Braun was going after Sami on SmackDown, they were like, no, he can't get his hands on Sami. Oh no, what will we do if he gets his hands on Sami Zayn? And it's like, well, A, we've seen Braun Strowman historically get his hands on Sami Zayn regularly. And B, like, Sami Zayn is a wrestler. They're treating it like he's, I don't know, Terry Runnels or something. He's not Terry Runnels. He's Sami Zayn. There's a difference.
And Dave, I think I've not heard it, but I read somewhere that Dave Meltzer had said in Observer Radio that, like, the Sami Zayn as a manager thing is, you know, a complete creative decision as opposed to him being injured or anything, and that's kind of where it was. And I mean, when I was with Steve Gunn in, you know, in Madison Square Garden for Raw and SmackDown, at that point it was a month before SmackDown actually moved to Friday nights. One of the most, and they'd obviously advertised The Undertaker was going to be on that show, and The Undertaker Sami Zayn segment was tremendous, you know, and Sami Zayn's like goading Undertaker and doing this whole thing. So he is very funny, and without a doubt, but he does feel like an absolute bit player now, which is a shame, because like Sami Zayn is a very, very, very good pro wrestler, and he's actually at times been a very, very good and captivating character. So to see him kind of reduced to, I know it's a manager role, but he's managing Nakamura, who, let's be honest, you'd rather eat a block of cheese than watch that guy at this point. Like, there's just nothing there. So, and then he's given Cesaro, and Cesaro's great, but he means nothing. So it's like, it's not like Sammy's got someone who's like super over and super in a great program, and you can take advantage of all of his charisma. He's just kind of put in this box of irrelevance, and that kind of bugs me about it a little bit.
Well, and the thing is, like, when I saw that Sami Zayn was, because I remembered that he was with Nakamura, I didn't know that he was with Cesaro as well. And when I was like, oh, he's also managing Cesaro. Like, if he has a stable of really good wrestler dudes who are mad about stuff and underutilized and whatnot, I think that could be a brilliant story. But it came across more as they were comedic fodder to Braun Strowman. And that I didn't love so much. I don't know. Like, I think it has potential as a thing, but it doesn't feel like SmackDown has the life to breathe into anyone right now to make anything be an important thing. And, like, other than The Fiend, who I'm not even super thrilled with what he's doing right now. And Daniel Bryan is magic. Like, Daniel Bryan is absolute magic, and I love him, and he's the best ever. But, like, it's a bummer for me because the SmackDown set is, like, so pretty and Ovaltron reminiscent and, like, really cool with lights and stuff, and I love blue, and I just feel like it's wasted on this program.
Well, if you like, I mean, because obviously we watched SmackDown, and then we watched Raw, right? And Raw was, I mean, I thought Raw was a fun show. I had fun watching Raw.
Raw was fun,
and I feel like in some ways, like, I don't know if this is me just like generalizing both rosters, but I feel like for the most part, there are one or two exceptions on either brand. But like Raw feels like all the people who like they're like all the good ingredients who you're like, oh, I want to try this new dish, that new dish. You know, it's like a tapas of like new exciting things. And then SmackDown's like all the shit things that your, you know, parents used to feed you when you were a child. And you're like, oh god, not Bobby Roode again, not Dolph Ziggler, not Baron Corbin, not Roman Reigns. Like, it's just all old stuff. That's just like none of it. You, Braun Strowman, you know, he's now in that category, sadly. Shinsuke Nakamura. So, while the.
Yeah, dudes who like were the coolest for a long time, and now they don't feel like they're the coolest anymore. And it's a bummer because, like, I mean, I love Roman Reigns as a professional wrestler. I think he's really, really great. But he always comes with the Roman Reigns problem of being Roman Reigns, right? And that's an issue. Like, it's kind of like the Charlotte problem on Raw of being Charlotte, but I think they're navigating that a lot better with the whole Charlotte Rhea Ripley thing. I mean, really, the only two people on SmackDown that really I want to check out on a weekly basis and I might check out on YouTube are Daniel Bryan and The Fiend. And that's about it. And that's not enough to carry a show. I mean, even if you look at the main event of SmackDown this past week with the Fatal 4-Way to determine the number one contender to Bayley's championship that Naomi didn't win for reasons, question mark. Like, I don't understand why Carmella just pinned Naomi just, like, out of nowhere. And Naomi's shoulder wasn't even down. And, like, what the fuck are we even doing here? Like, Bayley and Carmella have a history and everything, but Naomi's on top of the world. Naomi's great. Everyone wants to see Naomi, so they just go with Carmella. And I think Carmella's supposed to be a babyface, and she stole a pin, and I just don't get it. Like, I don't understand what's happening. And that Fatal 4-Way felt like it should be mid-card. It didn't feel like a bunch of stars clashing. I mean, Alexa Bliss, Dana Brooke, Naomi, and Carmella, like, they all have their uses, and they can all be good characters, and they can all, you know, be fine, I guess, in the ring, but none of the women's division on SmackDown is really gripping me right now. And that's a big old bummer. Like, I mean, ideally, I like Bayley coming in and laying out Carmella because she's the number one contender, but I was like, okay, this is a thing that's happening. Like, I didn't get major, like, Baymella nostalgia feelings. I don't think they've really earned just having the championship match on SmackDown, considering the fact that Bayley and Carmella do have a history together, and you'd think they'd want to delve into that and tell a better story, but apparently not.
Apparently not. I mean, you know, even if you go through the, and we'll go through the, basically we're going to go through some SmackDown and Raw stuff, talk about WrestleMania coming to LA, talk about another couple other bits and pieces that are going on, but, you know, to me, when you look at a lot of the SmackDown stuff, like, you know, you have the Usos, right? Who would the Usos go up against really well? The Street Profits, who are on Raw. Instead, Ziggler and Bobby Roode. Or you have, like, Elias versus Cesaro, and it's like, it's just a bunch of guys that are like, you know, they don't mean much anymore.
When did Elias get this theme music, by the way?
I mean, it feels like I've heard it for so long. I think it was when he came back as a babyface, or did he have it before he left? It shows you how little he means that, like, I don't remember.
I mean, it could have been a year ago and I just haven't noticed. I don't know. But like,
he had the
theme
good one
music
for a
for
while.
Him was playing and I didn't know how to feel about it.
You know, but you get guys like Daniel Bryan, you've got guys like Sheamus, who, like, you know, Sheamus, who, imagine if Sheamus was the guy to come out and interrupt Aleister Black. That'd be great. But instead he's facing Apollo Crews. So it feels like there's all these people on SmackDown who have potential, and they're unfortunately stuck with, like, the other people that they just kind of have there, and you have to do something with it. But let's talk about a couple of bits and pieces on SmackDown. To get your take. Obviously, the biggest story of the show was that we were told that Goldberg's going to tell us who's next. And as he was speaking to Michael Cole via satellite from his home, which was not the advertisement that we had been given.
How incredibly underwhelming, right? Like, as soon as they... Well, I saw this on YouTube before I watched SmackDown, but how incredibly underwhelming to see Goldberg appear live via satellite on The Rock, when we were advertised that Goldberg was going to appear on SmackDown and he was going to be there and he was going to say who's next and he was going to do that. Like, Goldberg in an arena with crowds reacting to him is awesome. Like, he is awesome. He's great. He's Goldberg. He captivates a crowd. He's great. Him sitting next to a car in his garage and just being like, I'm Goldberg and I would like to be in the wrestle. And then, you know, The Fiend interrupts and is awesome and is great. But then Goldberg's just like, you're next. It's like, could you have put any less effort into this? Any less? Because I don't think so.
Well, because the other thing is, like, I imagine that... Where was this episode again? This was in San Jose, California. So this is in San Jose. If I lived in San Jose, there's a high probability that if I wasn't going to this show and somebody was like, and it was advertised that Goldberg was going to say who's next, I might have just bought a ticket to see Goldberg. I would have been very frustrated if instead I got a satellite video link. Like, they totally misled what that was going to be.
100%.
I will say, though, so, you know, obviously, Bray Wyatt in his Firefly Funhouse did a kind of news thing, interrupts, and he's kind of in like an office chair being like a news anchor, and Mercy the Buzzard has said it's going to be a cold day and help before he loses the title. And like you say, you know, Wyatt builds all this stuff up and Goldberg's just like, you're next. And it was very deflating. I will say this though, like, I am very intrigued by the idea of Goldberg versus The Fiend. Like, I don't know how that works. I just hope that they have a plan of how that's going to work, because how many times have we had conversations about them having a match where they put, you know, two people together and you go, oh, I'm really, you know, you have all these ideas of what could happen and they don't really have a great idea, and then you kind of come out of it going, oh, they just shouldn't have booked it.
Well, and it seems like one of those situations where, I mean, when you see a Goldberg match, you want to see Goldberg like do a spear and a jackhammer, and you don't want it to be long necessarily, and you want him to be Goldberg, right? You want him to be like, rawr, I'm a big scary man with many muscles. And The Fiend is this unstoppable monster man, so I guess Goldberg can do his stuff and then The Fiend can pop up and still win, and I hope that it isn't long. But if Goldberg gets squashed in sort of like relatively short period of time, then is that really going to be worth, like, it seems like one of the worst ideas that they could do is Goldberg versus The Fiend. Like, ideally, it seems cool in a video game sense of like, oh my gosh, like these unstoppable monsters are going to clash off against one another. That's pretty cool. And Goldberg being kind of like, I mean, he's kind of old gunslinger status at this point, right? Where like he's the veteran and he's coming back, but he wants to still say who's next to people and all that kind of stuff. I just don't know if this is going to be redemption for Goldberg after the Undertaker situation. I mean, like, him squashing Dolph Ziggler at SummerSlam was a delight. So I enjoyed the hell out of that. I thought that was a lot more fun. But Goldberg versus The Fiend, like, you don't want to see Goldberg just get beat. But, like, The Fiend sure as hell can't lose that Universal Championship to fucking Goldberg at this point.
I mean, I don't think so. I mean, I think... The thing that makes the match a kind of fun proposition is that there is a part of you that kind of goes, Goldberg versus Roman sounds fun. So that's like,
yeah.
It's not like it's like a lot of the other things that are going, there, I don't know if you've seen the local ads for Elimination Chamber in the area have basically given away what the six-man Elimination Chamber is going to be for the SmackDown like shot at WrestleMania.
Have not noticed.
And it's Roman Reigns, Daniel Bryan, Braun Strowman, Shinsuke Nakamura, King Corbin, and Bobby Roode. And like with that match, you kind of go, like maybe Daniel Bryan, but even then he's just had the match. So basically, you know Roman's going to be the guy. Whereas like what I think is good about this is it does create a little bit of doubt that we go, Goldberg Roman could be a huge match. Maybe they do that. Have they got another plan for Bray? And you have all this like question in your head. Then you've also got the idea of how physically do they have a match? How does Goldberg respond to, you know, the Fiend? So I think that there's interest coming into it. I have no idea. The thing that's good about this is if he has just like a 4.5 minute match where like Goldberg's just like fucking rugby tackling the Fiend and bouncing him about the place and trying everything, and then the Fiend eventually gets the better of him and puts him out after like three, you know, devastating Sister Abigails, then great. That sounds like a legit great match, and it might be the first actual great match they've managed to have in Saudi Arabia that's not involved Mansoor. So that would be good. So, I mean, the match itself I think is actually fairly original and interesting, but I'm just very aware of my words. They could be taken against me if they don't have a good finish.
Well, and it just seems like one of those things where it needs to go well and it needs to go right and they need to have a plan, and I don't trust that they do. Like, it seems like a cool idea in theory, but then when you're talking about like building things for future, it gives me pause and it makes me nervous, and the amount of effort that they put into setting it up here does not exactly fill me with hope, given that it was just a live via satellite, your next paint by numbers Goldberg situation. So I don't know. Like, I was underwhelmed and it bums me out because I think Bray Wyatt's so good. Like, I thought Bray Wyatt's performance in this segment was amazing. And he was like, oh, Billy, like calling him Billy, which has to get under Goldberg's skin, right? Because he's Goldberg. He's like big, serious man, right? And being called Billy and being talked down to and, you know, getting the Bray Wyatt treatment. I think that is intriguing from a character perspective, but you have to really put a lot of stuff behind that and you have to put a lot of effort in. And I just don't know that WWE is going to do that, especially for a Saudi Arabia show that a lot of people aren't going to be watching.
Let me ask you, just kind of come out of that, because I know obviously Roman Reigns is still tied up with Baron Corbin and the feud that will never end. But you mentioned you love The Fiend and also you love Roman Reigns as a pro wrestler. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about the prospect of Roman Reigns and Bray Wyatt at WrestleMania for the title? Can it go well? Do you think it will go well? How do you think people are going to react to it? Because you're someone who likes both, so I'm curious how you think that it would go kind of in execution.
It makes me nervous. It makes me really nervous because if The Fiend feels like he's just been built up as a thing only to be beaten by Roman Reigns at WrestleMania, then that's just going to be so incredibly deflating. I like Roman Reigns, but again, the problem with Roman Reigns is that he is Roman Reigns and he has all of the Roman Reigns baggage with him. That's why I like the idea of Roman Reigns versus Goldberg. I wish that we could get to Roman Reigns versus Goldberg without having to have Fiend versus Goldberg first. Like, I wish that they would have just set up a Roman Reigns versus Goldberg, spear versus spear, like, have them fight based on dissension, have them fight based on Roman being the new big dog and Goldberg being like, hey, I used to be awesome and I'm still awesome and let's fight about it. I don't know. I would have preferred that without having Goldberg have a shot at the Universal title in the meantime to kind of drag everything down. Roman Reigns versus Fiend, just like, I can sense the backlash already, I guess. And that kind of sours it. Like, ideally, as a match, I think it could be super fun, but just all of the baggage and all of the analysis and all of that kind of stuff, I don't think it's a match that you can really watch with your heart. I think you're just going to be analyzing backstage politics the whole time, and that's a bummer.
And I don't think there is a way out of it, really.
I think that's the environment they've created for us.
I also don't think that there's a... I don't think no matter what you did with Roman Reigns, you could get to a point where people would want to see him. Because people love Bray Wyatt. They don't really see The Fiend as a heel. You know, it's like when you're watching AEW that, like, obviously, I'm guessing the initial idea was Hangman Page would go heel. But now, obviously, they can't do that. Because if they have him go heel on The Elite, like, people are going to just cheer Hangman Page because he's cool and he's the guy that drinks beer. So, I think already it's like, if... The only real way that Roman Reigns versus The Fiend would actually work, it just feels like they're always playing with fire with Roman Reigns, like every year, and it's just, I feel bad for the guy, because, and it's, and I was, you know, Vince never turned Cena heel. He never turned him heel at any point. He never wanted to. And now, like with Roman, it's like maybe he does need to do a heel turn. Maybe that's part of what needs to happen, because otherwise we always come back to the same fear that he's
going
to get.
Well, if Roman Reigns beats The Fiend at WrestleMania, then he is going to be booed. Like, people are not going to cheer Roman Reigns against The Fiend because, like you say, The Fiend is fucking awesome, right? Everyone loves The Fiend. So people are not going to cheer Roman Reigns, even though Roman Reigns is a great professional wrestler and I really enjoy his work. But him being Roman Reigns and then beating the guy that we like, I mean, that's what got Roman Reigns into the sticky situation we have now, is Roman Reigns beating the dudes we like and being Roman Reigns about it. And going back there is just going to be like, ugh, it's so frustrating to think about, because I think they've done well to keep Roman away from the title for a long time. But I still don't think it's been long. Like, there are two problems, right? Like, it still hasn't been long enough that we've forgotten the Roman Reigns problem. And also, they want to put him up against everyone's favorite, and that has never gone well historically. So if The Fiend beats Roman Reigns, that'd be amazing. That would cement The Fiend. Like, Bray Wyatt should totally be the guy right now. He is the guy, and he's awesome. And if they can just go with that and have him continue to be the guy, then I'll be happy about it. But it's just, it's, I don't like when I can't watch wrestling with my heart and just lose myself in it. And this is one where, like, because of the environment they've created, I can't just lose myself in the idea and the story of this match. So it really makes me not want to watch it very much.
It's a problem. You did say that you loved Daniel Bryan on the show. Talk a little bit about your, because I mean, you've seen, obviously you watch Rumble and stuff. You've seen the most of what he's been doing, but getting to see him here against Heath Slater, and he's angry, he feels quite bitter. It's, you know, he's continuing to do something different.
Well, Daniel Bryan's one that I really wanted to watch because he's the only one who's faced The Fiend twice, right? And so him having to be changed kind of twice over has been really interesting, because he was bad guy Daniel Bryan when he first went up against The Fiend. Then he lost his hair. He underwent a metamorphosis. He brought back the Yes Movement to try and defeat The Fiend, and he still couldn't do it. And so now it's like, he was babyface for a little bit, but now he feels angry. And like Heath Slater coming up to him in the locker room, trying to give him words of encouragement, but in the most Heath Slater derpy, not really able to be a person kind of way. I love Heath Slater. He's amazing. He's still such a good character to have around. Like, he's so incredibly useful in WWE. And I think he was great here, and kind of instigating Daniel Bryan and kind of goading him a little bit without meaning to. And I liked seeing Daniel Bryan kind of kick the shit out of Heath Slater. I liked seeing him angry. I liked seeing him react to the loss. I liked seeing him react to what The Fiend had done to him. And I think that his character arc continues to be really interesting to me. I know that I'm blinded because I think Daniel Bryan is made of actual magic, and I don't care. Like, I love him. And he's always dynamic, and he's one of the only people on SmackDown. Like, he felt more interesting to me than The Fiend, even, in a way, just because, like, as a performer and the way he connects to the crowd and the way he connects to me, I always want to see what Daniel Bryan is doing. And yeah, I'm kind of curious if it's going to be a descent into madness where he goes off the deep end again. I don't know.
And he's one of the most nobody really knows what he's gonna be doing at WrestleMania. Like, Daniel Bryan's one of the only ones you can't really pick out a trajectory for him. Mm-hmm. Which is good. So you hope that the trajectory is going to be something interesting.
I hope it's good.
So and then they chose the women in the main event, which, you know, is great. But Carmella getting the win just kind of felt very deflating. I think with Carmella is like, and again, I said this on the Overrun on Patreon, patreon.com/insideropes, that Conrad had said when he was over here that, like, when he saw Naomi's glow in the belt dark, he thought it was fucking stupid, right? And there's a lot of people who did. And he didn't say it because he's watching the show with his daughter, and his daughter actually thought it was really cool. So he was kind of sitting watching it along, and he was talking about how, like, he realized that not all wrestling's for him. And, like, his dad would have been sitting going, the $1 million belt? Like, a belt with a big dollar sign on it? Like, what's that all about? And I think that the reason why the Carmella decision is a bad shout is because I think a lot of, and this is, I don't know if this is controversial or not, I think a lot of people maybe don't realise that, like, Naomi as a black woman is very relatable to a lot of people in America who watch that show. Whether you are a black woman who is an adult who hangs out with your friends and you see some of you know yourself in Naomi, or you have friends who are like Naomi, or you're a young girl who looks up to Naomi. So I feel like Naomi's got a lot of stuff that like I might not, I mean, I think I do get it, but like it's not for me, it's not aimed at me, but I totally get it and think it's a good thing to have and it should be explored. Whereas with Carmella, I don't know. I've not seen anywhere, and maybe I'm getting it wrong, I've just not seen the people that are really clamoring for the Carmella push, but I have seen a lot of people who are clamoring for Naomi, so I think that says a lot.
I mean, there are people who like Carmella fine, and Carmella can be a really good character. Why they split up her and R-Truth, I will never understand, because they were just such a delight together. Like, Carmella's a great character. Carmella should not be champion. We went through a Carmella championship reign. It wasn't good because she's not great in the ring. She's great at being the moonwalking trash talking princess of Staten Island, right? The thing is, I think Naomi, out of the women in this match, I think Naomi is probably one of the best in ring in terms of this four-way. I'd say Naomi and Alexa's actually gotten pretty good too, but none of them are like incredibly great wrestlers in terms of what they can do in the ring. I think Naomi has the most like athletic feats of skill. Like she has flashy moves that look really good and you can kind of like work matches around that and stuff. And there's no shame in that. Like she can be awesome, but I think Naomi has managed to permeate pop culture in a way that none of the other women have. I think Naomi does connect with so many women on so many levels. Like Naomi coming out with natural hair and just looking awesome and dressing in neon and like just being an unapologetic black woman who's not trying to like conform to the standards of a WWE diva is so incredibly refreshing and awesome. And I think, I don't know, I get the feeling that they're probably thinking, well, Naomi's really, really hot, so we'll save Naomi versus Bayley for WrestleMania, and we'll just have Carmella do this sort of like transitional filler feud right now in the meantime so that people will want Naomi more. But I think it came across as deflating. Like, you could have done Naomi here and then had, I don't know, like a non-finish at the next pay-per-view. It's not like the women are going to be fighting in Saudi Arabia, so, you know, like it's not going to be till Elimination Chamber anyway. You can have them kind of like build a big feud with Naomi and Bayley. And, you know, Naomi's someone I said a couple months ago, I was like, she shouldn't really be champion, but she's really important to the show. I wouldn't even be that mad if Naomi were champion again at this point, just because she's so hot and like the crowd is so behind her and she's the most popular one on the show by far. So
she would be one of the people who would really, really benefit from not having scripted promos.
Because, oh yeah, absolutely.
I think she would then again, because like, I feel like if you are a fan of Naomi and like, I feel like she doesn't talk the way that we've seen her talk in Total Divas before or Total whatever, yeah, Total Divas, and mm-hmm. you know she talks very differently on that show as she does on screen and on WWE TV, and I just think that's. I mean, I was talking to somebody last week who has worked in WWE before and said, and trust me, I was shocked to hear this. That, like, Dana Brooke is one of the funniest people we've ever met. I mean, I could have gone through my life and never, ever called that.
But it doesn't surprise me considering some of the little vignettes she's done. And when she seems to show a personality, she seems really fun. Like, I really like Dana Brooke as a performer and as a character, but she doesn't get to do much, you know? She, like, in this match, in this Fatal 4-Way that we watched, I like the fact that she's kind of, like, the power wrestler. I like the fact that she's doing more like power bombs and strength moves and stuff, like trying to channel like Beth Phoenix or Nikki Bella, that kind of wrestling style. And I think that she's actually gotten better at that kind of thing. And it's like, if you would accentuate her strengths and kind of hide her weaknesses in terms of like technical ability, I think Dana Brooke could be a valuable performer. But the problem on SmackDown is that you don't have a women's mid-card. Like, this Fatal 4-Way for the number one contendership for your world title felt like it was a match of four mid-carders. Well, three mid-carders and Naomi. And the problem is that one of the mid-carders won, and so it just feels like the women's division is entirely mid-card, and that's a problem.
It's a big problem. So, yeah, and I think, I mean, when they get to, I think post-WrestleMania, what you probably need to do is, because I assume there's going to be, did we get a draft in October? Or was it last
year? Yes. When they started SmackDown on Fox.
Okay. Well, like, I mean, I think what you need to do is, if you look at, like, the NXT women's division, there's probably, like, what, 12 good wrestlers in that brand?
At least,
Say there's 12, right? So, I think you probably need to get, like, four or five, maybe even, like, yeah, four or five of them up, or got to, you know, break them up between Raw and SmackDown. Get them over there. Do different things. Maybe bring Dana Brooke or somebody like that down to NXT to get more time to be able to develop a character or whatever. Because otherwise, I don't think there's... Between Raw and SmackDown, I'm not seeing that there's enough there for them to do any more than they're doing without calling more people up. So maybe instead of having a bunch of people in the main roster who aren't doing much, like a Dana Brooke, put her to NXT, put her in there with, like, the best women's division they've got, and, you know, obviously keep key people, and see if there's anything there. There might be something there that they've not explored yet. There might not be, but you'll be able to tell, and then you can make a decision, because otherwise I'm not too sure what the answer is, apart from bring Sasha Banks back and have her end her misery.
Yeah, I mean, like, Sasha Banks obviously is missed and needed, and we don't really know what sort of injury or situation.
I think it's a shoulder,
right?
I've heard shoulder, but that's all. But, like,
okay.
One of the things that people keep saying is, oh, you know, it has to be Sasha versus Bayley at WrestleMania. That's going to be huge. And I'm like, it should feel huge. I don't know if it would.
But at this point, I don't think it would. You could make it feel huge. Like, you could make it a situation where Sasha versus Bayley would be a good story, but it doesn't seem like the story that they want to tell at this point.
So stay tuned, I guess, to see what happens with the SmackDown Women's division and the belt. And I mean, so they're going to do Carmella and Bayley next week in Vancouver on SmackDown. Yeah, I mean, Bayley's so dull as a champion that Carmella being champion wouldn't really seem like that much of a step down. It would just feel like...
Quality would go down, though.
Yes, so probably in that way it would. But, I mean... interest level would probably not change, but out of all the women on SmackDown right now, Naomi probably would be the best choice to be champion, to be honest.
I think she probably would be, and like I said, I think Naomi can have good matches, especially if she's in there with certain people who can also have good matches. But if you keep, like, if you make Naomi champion and have a Naomi Carmella feud, it's not going to be great, because it's just not right. What show is Lacey Evans on? Is she on SmackDown?
She's on SmackDown because she lost the match to Bayley at the Rumble.
Right, that's right. So where was she? I don't know where she was on this episode. I don't know. I guess she just wasn't in the four-way because she just had a championship match, which is fine. But, I mean, the women's division in general, like, it's very lopsided in terms of all of the talent being in NXT and Raw and SmackDown just having, like, such sparse divisions. Like, Raw feels a little bit better, but I think Raw feels... obviously more invigorated too with the presence of Rhea and now Shayna appearing on Raw. So Raw just feels a little bit more robust, and plus, like, they have Becky and they have Charlotte and they have multiple stories going on, and SmackDown just, it's not good. Like, I mean, and there are people waiting in the wings that could be making this awesome. Like, someone like a Mercedes Martinez could easily move to either Raw or SmackDown and kill it and increase match quality tenfold and work with some of the women who aren't as good in the ring to maybe make them better. I think she's also super valuable in NXT, working with, you know, like, we saw Mercedes Martinez versus Casey Catanzaro last week, and those are the types of matches that Casey Catanzaro should be having so that she gets better. So it's tough because you want veteran presence in NXT to help the women who are kind of like performance center trained, but they need people real bad. Like, maybe Chelsea Green should be on Raw or SmackDown. Maybe, I don't know. There are just so many.
So many.
They have, like, Indy Hartwell signed to their roster, and she's been in, like, one battle royal, and she's not doing anything. Indy Hartwell's great. At least as a wrestler. I've not really heard her cut promos and stuff, but...
we will see, but they need to do something. They need to shake some stuff up. Before we talk about Raw, we should mention that WrestleMania is going to be coming to LA, to SoFi Stadium in Inglewood, which is outside LA. WrestleMania Hollywood and coming in 2021.
And they're actually calling it WrestleMania Hollywood. Finally, WWE adopts my name conventions.
They do. And, like, because when they did WrestleMania 21, for people who were I mean, I don't, what, not watching wrestling in 2005 is fine. But if you were too young in 2005, that makes me feel 100 years old. But in WrestleMania 2005-21, they went full Hollywood. They did all these vignettes. They're all on YouTube. You can see them with, like, Triple H and Ric Flair reenacting Braveheart. The Undertaker reenacting Clint Eastwood and Dirty Harry. Booker T and Eddie Guerrero doing Pulp Fiction. Mae Young and Moolah doing Basic Instinct. Like, it was great. It was so funny. So my hope is that they do that again. But this is the first... when was the last West Coast WrestleMania? Was New Orleans West Coast? No.
New Orleans is not West Coast, no. It would have been the California one.
San Jose, 2015.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So 5 years since they've done a West Coast one. But I think it's pretty exciting. And this is going to be the first time that LA has had a WrestleMania when it's like in a stadium and a whole week of events. So I think that's pretty cool.
The stadium looks cool from the picture I saw. It looks pretty neat. And apparently it's really big, so they can hold tons of people and brag about attendance records and stuff.
But LA, yeah, it should be good. WrestleMania Hollywood. It's,
I'm excited. I've never been to LA, ever.
I went once and didn't love it, so I'm looking forward to going back when there's a whole wrestling thing in it, because then it means I can... Then it means I can probably have more to do.
If they're doing WrestleMania Hollywood, I kind of want to like go out on the town and get all fancy for a night, just to like be fancy in LA.
Well, yeah, exactly. Or and like go to like one of those like, you know, the clubs that like Motley Crue used to be at and stuff, like something like that. Go in the Strip. Anyway, or probably just get harassed to buy things, as usually happens when you go to the touristy areas.
I was going to say, going to like some sort of like private club sounds really expensive. I probably don't have the money to do that, but I can get dressed up and like walk near a club.
I can do that too. No, I don't mean like a private club. I mean like the dingy rock bars where like, you know, rock bands used to finger people.
Oh, that sounds like a good time.
When in Rome. So WrestleMania will be in LA. Also, we should mention that The Rock's daughter, Simone Johnson, has signed with WWE. If she debuts, properly, she will be the first ever fourth generation wrestler that WWE have had. So, pretty exciting for her. Big shoes to fill, but I mean, if Indy's proven that that can happen, Charlotte Flair's proved that you can have like one of the biggest stars as a parent, and it doesn't matter if you can get good at it.
Yeah, I mean, like I don't know anything about Simone Johnson like at all, so I hope it works out for her. I guess like a fourth generation wrestler is pretty cool. Like it's neat that that's even a thing. So I mean, it's a big legacy for her. I hope that she's able to kind of figure out her own thing and not be like hampered by the legacy, I guess. Because I know when Charlotte Flair first came into NXT, she didn't want to be Ric Flair's daughter. Like there was that I think in like 2013 or something, those Performance Center videos leaked, and her really terrible promo was about how she didn't want to be Ric Flair's daughter. She didn't want to woo. She didn't want to do the knee drop. She didn't want to do any of that. She wanted to, you know, she wanted to be Charlotte, and she wanted to be her own person first. And she was like, she didn't really adopt Ric Flair's moveset until later on, until she'd already kind of established herself a little bit. So I think it is hard to navigate that and to kind of figure out how you can kind of pay tribute to your legacy without letting it define you and without people thinking that you're using it as a crutch. It's tough, but I mean, if she's skilled and talented and does well, I think that'd be awesome.
Yeah. I mean, I feel bad for her that she's got like the shoes to fill with the rope. I think the way that Charlotte adopted it was pretty much the right way to just like, you know, start off on your own and try and make it your own thing before you become, you know, you can't do another name for The Rock, the Stone. I don't know. Whatever she wants to call herself. Anyway,
But yeah. I think, like, you know who actually did it pretty well for a short period of time was Shaul Guerrero when she was Raquel Diaz in NXT, which, one really remembers. But she was very much not Eddie Guerrero's daughter, right? Like, she wasn't. She was her own thing. And for a while, she was doing kind of like this Lady Gaga thing. So it was just completely different. And, like, she is a Guerrero. She is Eddie and Vicky Guerrero's daughter. But they didn't really call tons of attention to that. Like, sometimes they did more in FCW, I would say. They called a little bit more attention to it. But yeah, like, I think she was kind of, like, making her own way and being her own person. But obviously, like, she didn't she didn't continue wrestling for quite a while due to some other stuff, and that's fine. And she's married to Aiden English now, and they seem very happy.
Mr. Abs.
Yeah, oh my gosh. He earns his bourbon. He sure does.
I should mention, we were going to talk about it on this podcast, and I could not view the full experience, but we are going to be on the Overrun on Patreon talking about Jon Moxley and Minoru Suzuki, which is a match from New Beginnings this past weekend. And oh my god, I saw some highlights and it looks so good. So I'm looking forward to watching that and being able to.
I think you'll enjoy the full match. Like, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about that. We've got some more questions to take from you guys. And obviously, the Wednesday night shows will have happened. So if anything comes out from that, we can talk about it. But we did watch Raw, which was another fun show in lead up to WrestleMania. Got a big debut, got a lot of stuff going on. So we're not going to talk about everything, but I should just mention, Seth Rollins did cut a decent promo with Buddy Murphy and AOP, and it led to the 8-man tag main event where Owens and the Viking Raiders and Samoa Joe ended up losing because basically the Monday Night Messiah had kind of got his disciples to be better at teamwork than, you know, the Viking Raiders, who are the shittest tag team alive. But
I think it's funny that you hate them so much. I don't think they're terrible. I think they're just Viking them. Dudes.
They're just like, they're half pregnant. Because they're not like, if you want to get me to love them as Vikings, give me a vignette of them at a cosplay event on a weekend. Like, give me something funny. Like, make it funny. Because it's not like, they're in no way humorous about it. And then they cut these promos where, like, so, like, we, on the Overrun, we were talking about this guy, Warhorse, on the Indies, who is, like, started doing these kind of, like, well, he does these, like, kind of Sting Warrior, Road Warrior type promos with face paint and all that. But when you watch him, you kind of go, that guy's bonkers, and in a really over the top way. But mm-hmm. with, like, the Viking Raiders, they're like, I don't buy it from them.
They're just kind of dudes who are dressed as Vikings. I don't understand why Sarah Logan isn't with them. Like, she's also dressed like a Viking, which is, I mean, she and her husband are very into, like, the Viking scene and whatnot, right? Like, that's why they do what they do. But, like, why is she just sort of, like, dressed like a Viking lady, but she's not even with them?
It makes no sense.
Wouldn't it make more sense to make her part of the stable?
I guess so.
And that would also explain why she's not as concerned with the Ruby Riott, Liv Morgan situation, because she's moved on to her new life. But she hasn't cut a promo addressing that. Like, I would like to hear that addressed. I want to know what Sarah Logan's thoughts are in this whole situation.
But I do think Kevin Owens did a great job on this episode, as did Samoa Joe. And maybe we're building to Owens and Rollins at WrestleMania, which would be super fun. They've had loads of good matches before. But yeah, there's now been so many kind of six or eight man tags that it's kind of lost the interest has been lost a little bit from it. So I know they're probably just trying to get through time, but I wasn't really planning on bringing too much of that up.
No, I mean, like, I'm into the idea of Seth Rollins and his disciples. It did crack me up when they started calling them the disciples, and I was like, I didn't realize they were actually called the disciples. Are they Brutus Beefcake now? But yeah, so that made me laugh quite a bit. I love the idea that Buddy Murphy got the pinfall victory in the main event. I think that's great. I think Buddy Murphy looks awesome, and his name's totally Buddy Murphy, and I'm sticking with it. I think they called him Buddy Murphy on this show, didn't they?
Well, Tom Phillips kept forgetting. I do want to say, like, even though there's been a bunch of the matches, and all I will remember in five years' time. I will remember Kevin Owens' cannonball that he did off the stage, which was, like, the most insane thing ever the other week. But on this show, I did love the finish of having Samoa Joe choking out Buddy Murphy in his coquina clutch, and then having him kind of half do it, and then kind of bending over, and then Seth Rollins taking advantage and doing the curb stomp, because Buddy Murphy was going to sacrifice himself for who he idolizes, and Seth Rollins took advantage. So the story of that I thought was good,
and the timing of it was really good too, like, because the ref was, I think, distracted by the Viking Raiders, and Seth Rollins kind of, like, got the curb stomp behind the ref's back, and Buddy Murphy was able to pin Samoa Joe off of that. It was really cleverly timed and really well executed. And it makes me just really happy to see Buddy Murphy in kind of a prominent position. And also, Seth Rollins seems a little bit more interesting than he has in recent days. Like, I'm intrigued by his jacket with the fur lining. Like, It's a different look for him. I'm not mad at it.
It's
His hair
not.
in a bun kind of works for me. He has one glove on for a reason that I don't super understand, but he's doing something.
He's just being fancy.
He's being fancy.
Just,
You know
getting a
what? He's
glove on.
feeling himself. It's good.
He's feeling his oats, letting him feel his oats.
Why not?
And I do, and it's nice to see AOP doing something again.
Yeah.
But then
And they
we.
can just kind of like be big mercenary dudes, which is what they're really good at doing, right? They can author some pain into some people. I'm into it.
Exactly. We
It's like
got.
the babyface team, I just am not as on board with because I don't know why they're pals. Like Kevin Owens and Samoa Joe seem to have kind of an interesting friendship. I'm not sure why they're pals with the Viking dudes, but you know, they're big, I guess. Did the Viking Raiders have like run-ins with? Oh, did they lose the
They lost the
championships to Seth
championships to
Rollins?
Seth Rollins and Buddy Murphy. And
Oh, then
then
that does make sense. That's fine.
we got Asuka's kind of last chance at Becky Lynch for the Raw Women's Championship. They had a 90-minute match. Anybody who wants to tell me there was a better part in this match than when Becky is on the apron and goes to kick Kairi Sane and she does like a sorry, like backwards thing off the apron, I died. It was so good.
It was great. This whole match was great. I loved this match. It was awesome. You know why?
Asuka,
Because they're both awesome.
but you know what, why else it was great is because they explained this in commentary. I've got to give credit. They explained the fact that Asuka desired to get the Raw Women's Championship. She wanted to beat Becky. She wanted to get the title. She wasn't just happy enough being the tag champion. So her motivations were clear as to why this match meant so much to Asuka, because she wants to be top dog. She wants to be the man. She wants to, erase the in her. Mind fluke of this year's Royal Rumble. So I thought having all that and having the rubber match and having Becky Lynch not afraid to take it on, even if Kairi's on the outside, was just all like good optics for what ended up being a really class match.
Well, and the whole story leading into their Royal Rumble match was that Asuka kept beating Becky and kept beating Becky and had Becky's number, right? So Becky's beaten Asuka once. Asuka's beaten Becky a bunch of times. So there were no part of my mind that thought I think Asuka's going to win the Raw Women's Championship here because I didn't think they were going to go that way. But in terms of storytelling, they tried. They tried their best to make me think that Asuka might win the Raw Women's Championship here. And there were moments where, you know, like Asuka had Becky in the Asuka lock or something like that. I was like, ooh, is something going to happen here? I don't know. And it was exciting, right? I liked the fact that they had that story. It didn't feel like Asuka was an underdog coming into it. It still felt a little bit like Becky was an underdog. And I think that's making Becky's championship a little bit more interesting, right? They mentioned on commentary, and I hadn't even really thought about it. Becky's over 300 days as champion at this point because she won it at WrestleMania last year. She's been champion the whole time. And it's a long championship reign. And I know like the Lacey Evans stuff wasn't great. And she just lacks major opponents to face at this point, which is a bummer. Or she has in the past. Now she has an opponent that I'm pretty into. But I think that having someone come after Becky and want that championship is the way to keep Becky's title reign interesting. She doesn't feel like a monster on top of the mountain. She still feels like she has to kind of scratch and claw from underneath to keep the belt in the face of adversity. And so I don't think that Becky Lynch is one of those situations where she's a better chaser than champion necessarily. Like I think she works as champion in this role for me too, and I kind of want to see her on top. Like I thought Becky Lynch was awesome on this show, and I was like, fuck yes, she's the champion, as well she should be,
Yeah,
even though I
absolutely.
kind of wanted Asuka to win. Like I'm super a fan of Asuka. Ollie asked me at one point, it might have been when I was recording with Azad actually, like who my favorite women's main roster star is now that Bayley's pish, and it made me sad. But I think it's Asuka. Like I think she's just awesome.
She is great. And this was a great night for Becky because you like I said this to you today when we were texting. I was like, this show felt like I was in WrestleMania season. And you should feel like that fairly often between January and April. And what they did on this show was they closed the Asuka feud. Immediately after the match, we saw Shayna Baszler come out. So here's a little hypocrisy that has been going on the internet, right? So Shayna Baszler comes out and she puts her clutch in quickly and then she basically takes her mouth guard out and bites the back of Becky Lynch's neck and she's like covered in blood. The people who are online saying, "Oh, that sucked," or like, "This was rubbish." It's like, all you bang on about, or all a
Who is
lot.
saying that this is rubbish?
The guy from WrestleCrap said it was bad, and I'm like, you run a website called WrestleCrap. But like, I saw a fair amount of people going, like, oh, come on, there was so much blood. And it's like, you want people to be more old school. You want people to try different things. You want people to explore different kinds of stories. My favourite one was, I mean, she's never established that character trait in NXT. She's expanding her fucking criteria, you fuck. I thought this was great. I thought this was absolutely tremendous. And, like, she's got all the blood coming out of her mouth. And, like, you know, Becky's selling it like she's just been killed. Like, to me, this was the type of angle you want to do. You want to do something shocking. You want to do something that's going to get people talking. And
Becky
really
was selling it like she was kind of in shock, right? Like, she was just like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. What the fuck just happened? Oh, my God. Like, this is not okay. This is not okay. I'm not okay. But I'm going to pretend to be okay because I'm supposed to be okay. But, like, holy shit, someone just bit me in the back of the neck and now I have a chunk out of my neck and what the fuck am I supposed to do with this? Like, it's not something that you expect. It's not a I got hit from behind, right? Like, Shayna Baszler took a bite out of Becky Lynch. It's crazy. I'm so here for vampire Shayna Baszler. I think it's great. I don't want her to necessarily, like, vampire everyone, but as a first statement to get her point across and be like, hey, I'm coming after you. Like, yeah, now Becky and Shayna need to fight, right? Like, I know that Charlotte hasn't answered that she's going to be facing Rhea Ripley or Bianca Belair at WrestleMania, but Charlotte's totally involved in the NXT scene at this point, which I think is smart because we don't need to be going back to Charlotte versus Becky. What we want is vampire Shayna Baszler. Like, I'm so here for it. I will be upset if we don't get a Gangrel cameo at some point, given that Shayna Baszler and Edge are both on Raw. Like, that's my dream, is just to have Gangrel and catering, like, offering vampire advice.
But did you see the thing today where WrestleVotes had put a thing out saying, like, this year's Hall of Fame class, the group is going to be very, very eccentric or something, or, like, some weird word, right? Where it was basically, like, the group's going to be mad. And somebody immediately, like, replied with a photo of the Brood with a question mark. And he was just like, lol, no. Or she was like, lol, no. So, yeah, the Brood's everywhere this week.
I love the Brood.
But yeah, I thought this was, like, really impactful, and there's a great photo, actually. If you go on my Twitter, KennyMC1985, I actually tweeted out earlier today when I was talking about Raw, and it's like a backstage photo of her in black and white, just, like, you know, fucking throwing daggers at the camera. And that's one of those moments. And I think this could have been very, very bad, but the performers executed it. So, like, do you know what I mean? Sometimes you see something in wrestling where you go, this could be great or this could be terrible, and the performers are all going to depend on how it goes. Mm-hmm. And I think that they were the reason it was great.
Yeah, I think they were the reason it was great. I loved this. I thought it was super fantastic. Like, it was different. It was, like, was it a little hokey with, like, so much blood coming out of her mouth? Yes, of course it was. But, I don't know, the visual looked awesome. And it led to Becky Lynch just being crazy, stone cold Becky Lynch, chucking people about, driving her own self in an ambulance, stealing a vehicle to go to a hospital, which is, like, so many crimes Becky Lynch committed on this program. And it's fine. She's the man. She's awesome. I love wrestling.
Let's just go into what she does later on. So she ends up, like, commandeering the ambulance to take away because she just didn't want to be fucked with these people. And then she comes back later on. But I don't know if, I mean, I'm not, like, a big gamer, but, like, I was laughing so hard at all the, like, Grand Theft Auto stuff that came out of it. Like, and somebody,
oh, I haven't,
like,
seen any of it.
Somebody had, like, simulated playing Grand Theft Auto with, like, Becky gets in the ambulance, and then, like, when she leaves, you're in the game until she comes back. Which is just, like, that's part of why Twitter is sometimes great. And then later
That's
on,
awesome.
She comes back and she comes out and she cuts this promo. And the gist of the promo is, you know, I'm coming for you. I don't care who you hang about with. I've beaten them all. And you better find me before I find you. And it's like, that's the Becky Lynch you want. I mean, as much as, yeah, you can get away with a month of kind of doing, she's unsure of herself and she's doubting herself. But, like, what made people love her was her being a cocky fucker, and she's back to that, and she's coming after Shayna. And Becky versus Shayna, I am fucking here for.
I'm so here for it. It's so exciting, and it's new, and it's different, and it's fresh, and there's vampire biting involved. Becky Lynch was awesome on this show. She felt like the man again, and I know that I haven't really been watching Raw a whole bunch. I liked her coming out in the sunglasses. I saw the gif of it. I thought it was funny. But this felt like the Becky Lynch that we fell in love with last year. This felt like the Becky Lynch that gets punched in the face and stands there and is like, bring it on, bitch, right? Like, this is the Becky that we love. This is the man. She steals an ambulance. She comes back. The former, like, ER worker in me just laughed because I'm like, there's no way you got all the paper. Like, even if you went to fast track for like laceration or whatever, there's no way that like a workers' comp incident like this would have taken you like 10 minutes because that's just never going to happen. But it doesn't matter because it's wrestling and it's silly and it's over the top and just, I don't know. I thought it was all super fun and chaotic and a blast. And I really want to see Becky versus Shayna so badly.
We also got a who knew that I needed to see Drew McIntyre on the VIP lounge beating up MVP? But here we are, and I did. Is how good is this guy clicking? And it's not just because I know him and he's from Scotland. He's fucking killing it.
So, like, I was watching this, right? And first of all, like, MVP is just back now, apparently, which is fine. I like MVP. VIP lounge was fun. He seemed kind of, like, cocky MVP, like, he was being a bit of a prick to Drew, and you kind of wanted to see Drew chuck him about, given that MVP was being kind of a dick, right? That all worked. But, like, honestly, I know that we've been cheering for Drew a lot, and we've been rooting for Drew because he's awesome, and we knew that he was awesome, right? Like, we've seen him be awesome in the past. Every time I saw Drew on, like, Raw or SmackDown or any of the shows in the past year, I've been kind of bored by it. And he has a tendency to be the guy who, like, is in tags and they don't want him to leave. So he just like leaves tag matches with a alarming frequency. And he's just been kind of like floating about there. And you know that he can be awesome because you've seen him work before and like be really cool. This is the Drew that we knew existed, right? Like Drew McIntyre and me, my interest in Drew McIntyre kind of has been based on like, I've seen his work before. He's been really good. He is from Scotland. He's pals with you. I want good things for him because he's a good dude. But like, I wasn't super into him on the program until now. And now he's just like, he looks like he's having so much fun with MVP. He's having a blast. He's like, no, when you talk about WrestleMania, you have to point at the sign. Oh, pointing at the sign and like just calling attention to it and having fun, man. And he just looks like he's,
I mean, he did the
like
balling
he's rejuvenated,
bit at the end,
right?
When he did MVP's little balling bit, like you're like, oh,
yes,
so good.
So good. And I think when performers have joy in what they're doing, and obviously, like, he must be on top of the world. He's going to WrestleMania to face Brock Lesnar. Like, there isn't really a better spot in the company, right? Like, I mean, last year he was going to WrestleMania to face Roman, right? He lost to Roman. Is that what happened?
Yes, yes, he did.
Yeah, which again, that's a pretty big spot at WrestleMania for him, but it felt kind of lifeless and I was kind of bored by it, like, in all honesty. And it's not necessarily his fault, but like, you know, it was just like, he's going to be sacrificed to Roman. Okay, it's fine. Like, it's good that they see good things in him and trust him to face Roman Reigns at WrestleMania, but whatever. This feels like the actual Drew McIntyre, who's a dynamic performer, a really great professional wrestler, and just he's connecting with the crowd so well as a babyface. He's not having to be like pretend angry dude. He's not having to be like Scottish psychopath who's angry about stuff and is gonna pal around with Dolph Ziggler for reasons. I love this Drew McIntyre. I love this Drew McIntyre, and I want this Drew McIntyre to beat Brock Lesnar. And I more of this, please.
I was online today looking at how quickly I need to order a Macintosh kilt to have one in time for Tampa. That's how much I am into this. So, not that it would be everybody, but, you know, why not?
I might get a tartan dress before WrestleMania.
Yeah, you probably need to. Come on.
I know that I'm not going to, like, Mania, but, like, I could still wear it about.
Exactly. I do want to give a quick mention to when Angel Garza came out with Zelina Vega and they had Humberto Carrillo come out and, like, basically attack him in street clothes, like, people wanted to see that fight, and I feel like showing Humberto in, like, a real situation where he, like, wants to kill somebody was 10 times more interesting than just seeing him come out and wrestle.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, like, Angel Garza is awesome, right? Like, he just exudes charisma. I love his promos. Zelina Vega is, like, one of the hottest humans in the world. I don't understand how she can look that good and be that talented, and she's just, like, one of those impossible people. But yeah, I think this is actually doing wonders for Humberto Carrillo too, because I want to see Angel Garza and Humberto Carrillo beat the shit out of each other. Like, I want to see Humberto Carrillo get a little bit of retribution against Angel Garza, his dastardly cousin who's disparaging his family name. Like, this is a fun feud. It's a fun angle. And I think this is what Humberto Carrillo has really needed. Like, I think the last time I was this interested in Humberto Carrillo as like a character person was when he was with Drew Gulak in 205 Live and kind of part of that stable, and Drew had kind of taken him under his wing, and then Humberto kind of like, you know, and then he turned on Humberto, and it was like Humberto versus Drew was a whole thing. And that was fun, right? Like, you want to have stories and you want to have feuds that mean something based on like a personal connection. And I really, really like this. I think Angel Garza and Zelina Vega are a great pair too. Like, I kind of can't wait till Andrade comes back and she has a stable of really hot Mexican men.
It's the dream. Obviously, we didn't get a lot of sort of furthering of the Rhea Ripley Charlotte Flair thing. We kind of got a little taster of it. But I mean, it feels to me like when you watch Takeover Portland this weekend, that you're going to be expecting Charlotte Flair to kind of come out. And I did like that she was kind of basically using the idea of Portland being like, you know, who said you would be the champion at that point? And just kind of was a bit of a bitch. And I like that Charlotte's kind of using the Rumble win to just act like she's above everything, and it's kind of making her more of a dick, and it's giving Rhea more to kind of bounce off of.
Oh yeah, Charlotte's absolutely the dick in this feud. I mean, like, if you watched her NXT appearance, she basically came in and was like, I'm so above this. And then, like, that's why I kind of liked Bianca and Rhea allying to be like, hey, no, fuck you. We are NXT. You are not above us. And, you know, we're gonna take care of each other, even if we are facing up Portland and stuff. Charlotte, I like the fact that Charlotte's kind of embracing the fact that everyone thinks that she's the chosen one and she doesn't deserve to win the Royal Rumble. She's just like, whatever, fuck you, I'm better than everyone. And she kind of is, right? Like, she's Charlotte Flair. She's awesome. I don't love her promo delivery. I never will, probably. It's something that grates at me, but it's almost like it's grating at me and making me want to see her get punched in the face. I want to see Rhea Ripley punch Charlotte Flair in the face. Like, they didn't do a ton more to further it, but they did kind of flirt with each other and kind of flirt with the idea of the two of them together. Charlotte's nails were very yellow and I found them a little off-putting, but small detail. But yeah, like, I'm into the idea of the two of them facing off for sure. You know, if Bianca beats Rhea and we get Bianca versus Charlotte, I wouldn't be mad at that either, but I just doubt that that's going to happen.
Very up for both of those matches, though. The final thing I want to ask you about from Raw before we go here is that Randy Orton came out to kind of explain in inverted commas what he'd
Boo.
done to Edge, and out came Matt Hardy to basically be written off of TV, cut this huge promo where he even brings up the Edge stuff with like Lita inadvertently, and the fans are chanting about it. He brings up TLC. He basically brings up like he had all this stuff with Edge, and you know, he even felt bad when he retired and all the hate went away, and why did you do it? And then Orton ended up taking out Matt Hardy and did a concerto to him. I wondered how this angle worked for you because, you know, we're kind of seeing the beginnings of the TLC era on Raw. Did this work for you, and how do you feel about Randy Orton just kind of killing all the things that you like?
I mean, boo Randy Orton, right? Like, if, like, I think I said the other week, if people thought that my ire toward Randy Orton was ever going to soften, he is just solidifying it here. But this was great. I thought this was great. I think Matt Hardy was maybe a little bit long-winded in his promo, but it felt like it came from a very real place because it did. And we are starting to see on Retro ITR, patreon.com/insidetheropes, if you want to listen to hear us talk about things from 20 years ago, we're seeing the beginning of that era. We've seen already the No Mercy tag ladder match with Edge and Christian and the Hardys, and I think the next one's at WrestleMania, I think. But I'm not 100% sure because we're not at WrestleMania yet. But yeah, like, we're starting to see that era, and because I've followed Edge's career and because I know kind of like the Edge and Matt Hardy situation, it rang very true to me. And it was interesting seeing Matt Hardy appear as this guy who was kind of defending Edge. It's interesting to see Edge off of TV because he's obviously, like, he's still injured and he is taken out by Randy Orton. And Randy Orton is a dastardly, dastardly cretin for taking Edge away from us. And it makes sense that Matt Hardy would be the one to be like, look, Edge and I have had our differences, but this is uncalled for. Like, Matt Hardy and Edge have had many, many differences in real life and on screen. And for Matt Hardy to be kind of like the guardian of history and to talk about their shared like feuds and alliances and whatnot in the past, is it was really interesting and I liked it. And I think even if I weren't as familiar with their history, you could tell that Matt Hardy was really getting over that, like, they were best friends before and then they weren't. And Randy Orton just like decking Matt Hardy, who is also someone that we love and who is also someone that we don't want taken away from us, even though we secretly kind of do, because we know that he's not going to be with WWE much longer and we kind of can't wait to see where he goes from here. But like, it just made Randy Orton so much more of a prick. So much more of a prick. He's just an awful, awful person. And I want to see Edge spear him so badly.
I didn't even realize this till like today, because somebody had posted it and I was like, it's so true. Another clever aspect to this, and I thought this is great as well, is Randy Orton is the legend killer.
Of course.
And he is killing more legends. And, you know, for Matt Hardy, there's just this kind of beautiful irony in that, like, you know, he's been this kind of like weird in limbo Matt Hardy. I know he says it on his Twitter, but he kind of has been on TV, and he comes out to this big reaction, people are chatting delete, and he cuts this big promo that kind of covers his run in WWE and leads to him putting over another guy on the way out. And I just thought it was like a really, you know, nice bookend for him. You know, he always wanted, he said before, he wanted to come back, he wanted to, you know, right the wrongs of at the end of his last run where he was quite messed up. He's done it, he's finished it, he's going to be moving on. And I mean, unless you found Christian, I don't know who you could get that would tie more in with like Edge, you know, that you could do this with, that it would mean as much. So I thought it was great. And I mean, I'm curious to see if we do get something with Christian between now and WrestleMania. I really hope we do. I mean, I know that Christian has, he had, he was concussion based, so you probably can't do a concerto to him, but if there's something, I think that would be a really good story. So give me more of this, please.
Yeah, having Christian involved would make sense. And I think a lot of people are familiar enough with Edge and Christian and Matt Hardy and their history that it kind of worked. And I think that, you know, if you are a newer fan who didn't follow their entire careers, I think Matt Hardy explained it well in the promos. So I think it kind of hit for, at least I'm curious if it hit for both audiences. Like, if you're a newer wrestling fan, I'd be interested to know if this worked for you. But yeah, I think that Randy Orton kind of having legend killer mode activated at this point is interesting, right? And it's a different dynamic too, because he's not young Randy Orton who's on the way up at this point. Like, he is on top of the mountain. He is the legend himself. And so it's like the legend becoming the legend killer again. Like, you almost want to see Edge put a stop to that, because it's just, it's Randy Orton being a dick. He's a terrible person. A terrible person.
He is, and I'm here for every second of it. Yeah, so fun Raw. Sandra, what are the plugs as we ride off into podcast sunset?
Sure, you can follow me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW, follow Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985, follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes, patreon.com/InsideTheRopes. We've mentioned a couple times, but you get tons of bonus content from us if you want to hear us talk about wrestling from 20 years ago and see the beginnings of Edge and Matt Hardy and all of their alliances and stuff. That's kind of where we are right now in the year 2000. So that's a lot of fun, plus bonus stuff with Kenny and Finn. And also, your Patreon support kind of helps us actually be able to do this podcast. And we really appreciate everyone who supports us over there. Like, genuinely, it's not just a thing we say. It's really, really super helpful. YouTube.com/InsideTheRopes is where you can go to see video content, including interviews from various media situations and clips from live events, all sorts of good stuff going up there all the time. InsideTheRopes.co.uk/tickets is where you can get tickets to see Kenny Omega in April. And I believe that's the only tickets that are on sale right now because the JR tour is done. But yeah, if you can go see Kenny Omega in April, that'd be pretty dope. He's on AEW and is in a really interesting story and is a tag team champion, and Kenny is going to talk to him about that, and it's going to be really great. So go there.
Absolutely. So fun times ahead.
Do it.
But to play is that we're gonna play Matt Hardy's theme, because he has kind of been written out, so he probably does deserve it. And also because we're probably gonna play Shayna Baszler's theme tune about 10 times now in WrestleMania, so we don't want you to get sick of it just yet. So yeah, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you on the...
And Goldberg doesn't deserve it because he was live via satellite.
Yeah, fuck him. No. No, don't say that. No.
Don't say that. He's a nice guy.
I like him. I'm friends with him. I like him too.
Okay,
thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you in the overrun. We're going to talk about the Nightmare Collective, listener questions, and much, much more. Bye, everybody.
Bye.